The many meanderings of the first Gen X man. Excellent.
Hello, hello, hello. Thank you. Thank you, fake audience. Thank you so much. And wow, it is really nice to see all of these middle-aged people here today in the fake audience. You all look great, even without any face tuning or taking your photo from high up above your head or sucking in that gut. That's right. Let it out. You're among friends here and nobody can see your gut. Your shirt is untucked. Yeah, that totally works. Really. Hello and welcome to season 2, episode 5 of The Many Meanderings of the First Gen X Man. For those of you keeping score, I am your faithful host and middle-aged meanderer, Will Boudreau. Today, we'll be talking all about the Middle Ages. No, not the knights and castles and bubonic plague Middle Ages, but the ages of, I guess, around 40 to 60, when suddenly you realize you are officially not young anymore. You know, when you walk into a clothing store and you can tell by the music alone that you are definitely in the wrong place.
Excuse me, Mr. Assistant Store Manager with the neck tattoo. Could you turn the music down, please? And do you have any not super slim fit shirts?
Slim fit shirts were an unwelcome development for the middle-aged man, but apparently they weren't slim enough because then they came out with super slim. You know, the kind of shirts that only fit underwear models or adult Macaulay Culkin or guys named Fabiano who subsist on nothing but energy drinks and cigarettes.
Hey, Fabiano, that shirt looks so great on you. Thank you so much. I have a great abs, but I'm so hungry.
The only way I could fit into a super slim fit shirt is if I 3D printed myself onto corrugated cardboard. But I wouldn't want to do that because then I'd just be so one-dimensional. Sorry about that. It was there. I had to take it. I've slimmed down, kinda. But for a while there, I was so fat that one day I was in a Banana Republic and I suddenly realized that there wasn't a single article of clothing in that entire store that would fit me. And I wasn't sideshow freak fat or anything. I had like a 38-inch waist. But the pants there had a hard stop at 36-inch waist. Anything past that and security guards tackle you and then shove you out a secret door where you're put on a zip line that sends you right across the street to the big and tall men's shop. You know, where all the clothes look like what Rodney Dangerfield or Ted Knight wore in Caddyshack.
Yeah, I'll try on these mint green polyester slacks and how about these white slip-on shoes?
One thing about being middle-aged is that everything, absolutely everything, feels like a workout. If I drop my car keys on the floor, I gotta take several deep breaths like a South Pacific pearl diver before I can bend all the way down to pick them up off the floor.
In, out, in, out, in, out. Okay, Will, you can do this.
Yes! The keys are now off the floor. And there go my glasses.
Okay, in, out, in, out.
I think they should have middle-aged basic training. You know, where a drill sergeant runs you through obstacle courses that recreate the many physical challenges of middle-aged life.
All right, you mushy middle-aged muffins, let's go. We're gonna whip you into slightly less awful shape so you can survive your cushy suburban lifestyles. Now let's start with clipping your toenails. And bend forward and clip.
And bend forward and clip.
And bend forward and clip.
And you're leaning forward and clip.
Hey, no skipping that pinky toe. Okay, now let's go into the car. And we're turning around to grab something off the floor in the back seat. And turn and grab. And turn and grab. No, you cannot recline your seat all the way down to reach the back seat. That is cheating. Man up, you middle-aged maggots. Now, we're going to find the pie plates somewhere in these kitchen cabinets. Now, we're bending and we're opening the cabinet. And we're bending and we're opening. And we're bending and we're opening. No, that is not a pie plate. That is a bundt cake pan. You got to keep looking. And we're bending and we're opening. And we're bending and... Okay, take a break. Okay, everyone, that's good. Now, sit on the couch. And we're going to attempt to watch a movie when it is dark outside. And we're watching and we're not sleeping. And we're watching and we're not sleeping. Very good. You're making it through the opening credits. Keep it up. Now the movie has started. Opening scene, very exciting. There's a car chase and you're all asleep. Okay, we'll pick this all up tomorrow. I know you'll be up early. I'll see you at 5 a.m. Sleep tight, my little middle-aged people.
There are many things I've done as a middle-aged man that, when I was younger, I never dreamed I'd do. Dyeing my beard, for instance. I have dark brown hair, but a reddish brown beard. And apparently, when you have red facial hair, it goes white when you're like 30. So, when I have a beard, I'm two-toned. My beard used to be a reddish brown with flecks of white, which I thought looked, you know, kind of cool. But now, my beard is snow white, like Santa Claus white. My beard is as white as a cotton ball in a snowstorm at a Connecticut country club. In other words, it's a very white beard. I work in advertising, which is, you know, one of the most youth-obsessed industries. Now, I'd had the white beard for a while, but I became more conscious of it when I hit my 50s. And so one day, I went to CVS and bought a box of Just for Men beard dye, and 45 minutes later, I had a beard as dark as my head. Now, when a woman changes her hair color, it's a very acceptable topic of conversation.
Oh my God, I love your hair. Look at you, you sassy redhead. Hey everyone, look at her hair, it's amazing.
When a guy dyes his beard, no one says a thing. It's like when your fly is open, or you've got spinach in your teeth. People just kind of cock their heads to the side when you walk into the room, and their eyes linger on your face a little longer than normal.
Hey, Will, what's new? Anything? Hey, everyone, Will is here, and nothing is new about him at all. Isn't that right? Hey, Will, did you... Never mind. I was going to say something beard. I mean weird. Why did I say beard? That's so strange.
The problem with my beard dyeing experiment is that I'm not exactly fastidious and not vain enough to keep up with the dye job. Apparently, beard hair grows faster than a bamboo forest. I'd have a nice, dark, brown, brawny paper towel man beard one minute, and then the next minute I'd have white roots popping up all over my big Irish face. It was like trying to keep up with dandelions popping up out of the cracks of your driveway. No matter how much Roundup you use, they keep popping back up. I eventually got tired of looking like Santa Claus with a dark brown toupee and then just shaved my whole beard off. I'll revisit the beard thing again when my head turns white. If I... you know, still have any hair at that point. Speaking of hair on my head, another middle-aged thing I did that I swore I'd never do was get a hair transplant. Okay, there, I said it. The whole thing kind of snuck up on me because my particular kind of male pattern baldness is not visible when I look at myself in the mirror. The front of my head always kind of looks the same, but every so often, I'd be in a place with lots of mirrors, you know, like a hotel elevator. And suddenly, I'd get a shocking glimpse of the back of my head. And then I could see it, a hairless desert spreading across the crown of my head. It was sneaky, hiding just out of sight from the mirror, but announcing to the rest of the world from behind my back.
Hey, everyone, check out Mr. Baldy Man over here. He has no idea.
From the front, my hair was Ron Burgundy. From the back, Homer Simpson. After much debate and some secret late-night online research, I decided to go with a famous hair replacement company. I won't name names, but I will say it's a reputable firm, and I know this because it is also the hair replacement system chosen by none other than Peter Brady. Yes, the middle son in the 70s sitcom, The Brady Bunch. I figured if Peter Brady trusted his famous wavy hair with these guys, they're good enough for me. This is what it's like to get a hair transplant. You show up, and you meet a doctor who, despite being in his 50s, has the most amazing head of hair you've ever seen in your life. I'm talking salon quality, romance novel cover worthy, thicker and richer than Ricardo Montalban's wig in Star Trek: The Wrath of Khan. If you've never seen that film, you should, if only for Ricardo's wig and for when he says to Kirk,
"Captain Kirk, revenge is a dish best served cold. It is very cold in space."
Dr. Handsome Head leads you into a room with a surprisingly not that comfortable chair and sits you down. It's not that it's an awful chair. It's a pricey procedure, and you're in the chair for, literally like, 8 hours, 10 hours. I've sat in better chairs in a dentist waiting room. Anyway, after you're uncomfortably seated, he takes a little pen-like thing and has a tiny needle in it, and it pokes the top of your head about 1,000 times in rapid succession. This is the equivalent of Novocaine for your scalp. He does it really fast, and it takes like 15 minutes to fully numb your skull, proving anyone who decides to get a hair transplant is literally a numbskull. I know, it was uncalled for. I know, but come on, it was right there. Again, it was right there. He also numbs a strip of hair on the back of your head and near your neck, and then he removes, or to use their word, harvests, the entire strip of skin with a scalpel. Now, this strip of skin has hair growing on it that will never, ever die, because in one of nature's many cold-hearted pranks, the hair on the back of the male head never dies. No matter how bald you get, you never get bald back there. It's a cruel joke, like if we all slowly lost our eyesight, but always kept our ability to see those weird, hairless cats. Who would want that? Okay, back to the transplant procedure. After getting my bald spot turned into a pincushion for 15 minutes or so, I wasn't feeling a thing. I had my headphones on and I was making my way through season one of Tom Clancy's Jack Ryan, starring John Krasinski, Jim from The Office. I thought a rollicking action-adventure series was an appropriate show to watch during one's hair transplant procedure. Then, Dr. Flowing Fur gave the strip of hair that he harvested from my head to three nurse-type ladies who had been sitting there waiting patiently. The ladies each took a third of the hair skin strip and, in what is undoubtedly one of the weirder jobs ever invented, they then spent the next hour or so painstakingly separating all the hair follicles one at a time from the skin using a large magnifying glass to see everything properly. Imagine doing that all day long. It's like if your job is to look at a succession of bagels under a giant magnifying glass and pick out all the poppy seeds with a pair of tweezers. Just a lot less appetizing than that. Then, Dr. Bushytop takes each follicle one at a time and plants it into your scalp with a tiny little tool that looks a little bit like a super miniaturized version of those garden shovels they used to dig holes for tulip bulbs. By the time this was all done, I could no longer feel either of my butt cheeks, and Jack Ryan had foiled the terrorist Suleiman's poison gas attack, and then Jack shot him in a crowded Washington, D.C. train station. Oops,
I hope you saw that series. Then, Dr. Luxurious Locks says...
Oh, great. Yeah, you should have hair back there in, let's say, around 8 months.
8 months? Really? That's a stat they don't tell you about in the brochure. So, 8 months later, I looked in a mirror and I saw that I was no longer bald back there. I didn't quite have all my hair back either. At best, I had gone from bald in the back to balding. Of course, if I wanted to shell out the cash to get one or two more transplants, I could have hair as thick and resplendent as Dr. Fabio. But I decided I'd had enough.
If you're thinking of getting a hair transplant, I strongly suggest you spend your money elsewhere. Maybe rent a beach house. You'll be buying memories of sandcastles and sunsets instead of follicle technicians and the skull-numbing pen.
Next, I'm going to talk about another very common middle-aged medical procedure for men. Just a warning here, this is a mature audience topic. So any kids out there who don't want an awkward education might want to tune out now. This is a story about something that daddies do when they don't want to make any more babies than the ones they already have and cherish dearly. Since I try and keep these stories family-friendly, I'm going to call this procedure the Big Snip. And after considering various options, I'm going to call the place where the snip occurs my marshmallows. So, here we go. A friend of mine, also a dad who, while loving his babies very much, did not want to create any more, got the big snip a few months before I did. I mention this because his snip did not go well. He describes it as somewhat similar to the end scene of the film Braveheart. You know, when Mel Gibson is disemboweled. Apparently, my friend's doctor was in something of a rush, because when he performed this procedure, it felt to my friend as if his insides were being pulled out through a small incision in his, you know, marshmallows.
Oh!
So it was not without some amount of hesitation that I arrived at my urologist's office. He was great, by the way, but even the smoothest, most professional, most problem-free big snip is not without its moments of, shall we say, discomfort. My first uncomfortable moment was after I was ushered into the Midtown Manhattan procedure room and introduced to the guy who'd be assisting my doctor for my snippage. "How you doing? I'm Lester," he said, grabbing my hand like a car salesman and shaking it confidently. I was told by Lester to take off my clothes and lay on my back on the operating table. I remember the radio was playing Z100, New York's top 40 radio station. "Gives You Hell" by the All-American Rejects was playing. I hoped Lester wasn't really listening to those lyrics. After I was lying down, Lester placed green surgical cloth all around the area that was going to be snipped. Then, he took the hand that he had shaken my hand so confidently with just moments ago. He ever so gingerly lifted my marshmallows up and then placed them back down onto the green cloth. He did this with incredible care and gentleness, despite being a young man of some size. I wondered how many marshmallows Lester manhandled on any given day. All this time, despite being somewhat shell-shocked, I maintained a pop-pop-pop poker face, just like Lady Gaga was singing about on the radio. I'll never forget lying there like that, utterly exposed. The most fragile part of my anatomy, sitting on green napkins, looking like a day-old pastry from a naughty bachelorette party. I really had to fight the urge to cover myself up. Not only was I exposed, I was presented, highlighted, offered up to the rest of the room. As men, we spend our whole lives guarding that area from any potential harm. When it's cold out, that part of the body retreats up inside, where it's nice and warm, well aware of its own vulnerability. There's a whole industry of sports equipment whose sole purpose is to prevent harm in that area in any athletic pursuit imaginable. And now, here I was, putting mine up for the world to have its way with. And then, In walked the doctor. Before he can do any snipping, he has to locate a particular tube. And so he started feeling around inquisitively. You know, like when you're in your gym bag looking for your car keys.
Well, I'd say I know it's here somewhere. I guess not this corner. Okay, how about over here? No. Here it is.
All this time I was saying things like, Then he grabbed the tube and held it in place while he took a needle and started numbing the area all around it. The numbing process ended well, but this body part had until this very moment enjoyed a pampered and protected life, so the first several stabs of the numbing needle were rather shocking. After the area was numb, he made a short incision and pulled the tube out in a loop. You know, like the bunny ear you make when you're tying your shoes. This pulling of the tube sounds, you know, kind of benign, but it was actually the worst part. That tube feels like an extension cord that's plugged in somewhere deep inside your body. And when the doctor tugs on it, your whole body reacts to the tugging.
Stop tugging my tube. Stop tugging my tube. Stop tugging my tube. You're going to disconnect me somehow.
Eventually, after more tugging than seemed necessary, he was done with that side. What? Oh yeah, the worst thing about this procedure is you got to do it twice, once on each side. Except the second time, you know with absolute certainty what is coming.
Oh boy. Oh, there's the inquisitive squeezing again. There's the jabbing of the needle. Oh, and the tugging. No more tugging, please. Stop the tugging.
And then suddenly, you're all done. And Linkin Park is singing Numb on the radio, which is exactly what you are, physically and emotionally. When you're young, your life is laid out before you like a giant maze with 1,000 unopened doors. Behind each door is the answer to a question. Who am I taking to the prom? Where am I going to college? Will I ever visit the Eiffel Tower? Will I ever actually get a job? Who am I going to marry? Then, one by one, you start walking around and opening doors, sometimes at random, and the answers all reveal themselves.
Hello, prom date. Excuse me, is this the right door? Are we sure this is the right door? This is the right door? Bonjour, Eiffel Tower. Hello, first job. Really, writing help wanted ads. That's my job. Okay. Hello, person I'm marrying. You said yes? Really?
I think the weirdest thing about reaching middle age is thinking about how many doors you've walked through and thinking about all the other doors you didn't open. You kind of feel like you're in the second half of the movie of your life, and you kind of know what's going to happen. And there are no do-overs.
I'd like to try being a teenager again, but this time not be painfully shy and also attend more rock concerts, the bands I could have seen in 1980. Yeah, I'd like to try college again, but this time further away than 45 minutes from my parents' house, like maybe NYU. I'd like to try my 20s again, but this time I'm gonna skip the mullet. And I'm going to take that job I was offered in Hawaii.
All those things have crossed my mind more than once. We all play that game. But as I sit here on the top of the age curve, looking at the ride down the other side, I'm reminded of the view I recently got from the top of a mountain while I was on vacation. I didn't climb a mountain. It was a drive-up mountain. Anyway, at the summit, I was standing there at 10,000 feet, so I was literally above the clouds. That's where we all are at middle age, at the top of a mountain. but we still can't see what's ahead. Too many clouds in the way. We can't even see what doors there are waiting to be opened. I have a sneaking suspicion. It's gonna be a big, beautiful, maddening, messy trip. Just like it was on the way up.
And away we go! Oh, look at all these doors. Let's open this one. Ooh, I'm on vacation with no kids. That looks awesome. What's behind this one? Thanksgiving 2040? Look at all the people at this table. Is that a vegan turkey? I don't even want to think about that. Hey, what's over here? Wow, I'm so old. But I'm at the beach, and I'm still holding my beautiful wife's hand.
Well, that doesn't sound so bad. Not so bad at all. That's all for this week's episode of The Many Meanderings of the First Gen X Man. I'd like to thank you all so very much for listening to my stories. Please tell your friends, Gen X, and all those, you know, lesser generations. Hey, if you like what you heard today, please consider, seriously consider, giving a 5-star review on Apple Podcast or wherever you're listening to this. And if you really, really liked it, write a review and I will personally read it out loud on my next episode. And if it's a great review,
I'll add some reverb and triumphant music.
And as always, enormous thanks to Watt White for our show's theme music. The Many Meanderings of the First Gen X Man is written and produced by me. I'm Will Boudreau, and I'll see you when we meander again.
The many meanderings of the first Gen X man. Excellent.